Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right. Hi, Reg. Well, look at this. The microphone is exactly where it should be. Did you do that? If you did, thank you. Or maybe just the fates. Wow, we're already starting on a good foot here. All right, let's keep the luck going then. No lollygagging. All right, three S's countdown. Let's do it. Put in the books. 419. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcasts. We are there. And while listening is certainly a prerequisite, a close number two is getting out there and telling your friends and spreading the word. So send an email, send a message, send a reminder, whatever it is. Get the word out to your friends and your family and anyone else who listens to a podcast and tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And if you like what you hear, don't forget you can always go to WGNradio.com, hit the prompt for podcast, and then hit the prompt for this podcast, and then stand back. They are alive. No, they're not really alive. They're recorded, but they're in there. Podcast after podcast from the last several years. We've been doing this now for 8 years and counting. So just keep scrolling down and loading more. We'll keep doing them. You keep listening. This is episode 419. So I'm looking, watching, always observing, trying to find out exactly what I should talk about on the next podcast. Always, I'm like a sponge, just always observing, standing around, soaking in, taking in, and going, oh, and then all of a sudden there's a little ding. It's like, oh, now this would make a good podcast. And it's sometimes the ideas come instantly, and sometimes they just kind of grow on me. You know, I start to see something happening more than once. You know, one time is an accident, two times is a trend, and three times is a behavior, you know? And I see these things, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Oh, that was, okay, enough already. And that's what has happened on today's topic. First of all, I think we have to, let me preface my bigger topic with this is, it's interesting how advertising is certainly getting more in your face, more risque on any kind of television, whether it's network television, whether it's streaming, whether it's on satellite or cable, if those even exist anymore. But there's no question. About, I would say, 15, 20 years ago, there was something in the advertising world called, you know, guerrilla marketing, especially that was born out of the ability on the internet to do things instantly, quickly, have a, get in and get out, make a big impact. Remember several years ago, those things called flash mobs? Remember where, I don't know how much it happened all across the country, but it certainly happened in California because there's a lot of entertainers out there, either established or would be or want to be entertainers that don't get a lot of work. So they perform for the sake of performing anywhere, anytime, anyhow. And the flash mob certainly grew out of the ability on the internet to put together people quickly. And suddenly, in the midst of public places, like at shopping malls or big get-togethers, people, I don't know how secretly it was, but secretly people got together online and organized themselves and got together. And a lot of these people were certainly talented enough to put together choreographed dances to specific songs and got together a couple of nights a week, I guess. And it didn't have to be professional dancers. There were some amateurs. I mean, they're sure the people just wanted to get involved. The internet obviously promotes socialization in some ways. And so these people would get together and then all of a sudden they would decide, okay, at noon on Tuesday at this mall or at this park or in this village square or whatever, where you would be expected to be a lot of people walking around and mingling and hanging around and doing things, that they would perform these dances and boom, they would just break out into dance. They get to put the boombox down without any explanation, without any introduction, and just start doing a dance, and it became an internet sensation. I remember there was an episode of Modern Family that showed this going on. I think Mitchell was a part of it. And anyway, so this whole idea, the internet really has opened up our society to do things on the spur of the moment. We are much less, I don't want to say prepared, but we're much less, let's say it this way, instead of much, we are much less, much more. We are much more spontaneous, and we can be, because of the immediacy and the instant posting, the instant access of the internet. I mean, a lot of this was coming through as well during the Trump presidency, where he was not only using Twitter as a main communication device during his presidency, but when the press was reporting on some of these tweets that he was putting out, they noticed the timestamp, and it was 1 in the morning, 3 a.m. So amazing access. And guerrilla marketing maybe even been going on for longer than this, but certainly I think it was inspired by the immediacy, as I said before, of the internet, to just guerrilla, right? It's under, guerrilla marketing is something that is not as organized, and it makes a quick impact. It's G-U-E. It's not like a gorilla. Guerrilla warfare is what they talked about in Vietnam. It was hidden, and it was spontaneous, and it wasn't as organized. But it had a great impact. It snuck up on you. And we see those same kind of traits, I think, now in advertising. If you go back and watch Mad Men, which I think is one of the best shows on television, and I'm sure it's streaming somewhere. I wish it was on free TV or pay TV somewhere, where like Law and Order is on, rerun 1,000 times and things like that. I wish Mad Men was, because Mad Men was not only one of the best shows ever made, and that's not just my opinion, but that's the opinion of many TV watchers and polls over the last 15 or 20 years. But it really was not only was it well acted and well written and well produced, but it really was an intriguing time capsule of a certain period of time, not only in American history, not only in human behavior, but also in the business industry that it glamorized or deglamorized in many ways, the advertising industry, which really exploded in the 50s and 60s. So much of our society that we take for granted today had its roots, its blossoming at the very least. Maybe not its roots, but its blossoming after World War II. It became such a fertile ground in so many ways. America, thanks to World War II, not only did America have great confidence and euphoria in itself, great pride and unity. I don't think the country has ever been as united as it was during World War II. And sadly, I don't think it will ever be as united as it was during World War II. Certainly there were detractors, but for the most part, everybody seemed to be supporting the cause, chipping in any way they can. It's so different than in today's pocketed niche world, where everybody is isolated and almost tribal and have their own little groups. And so not only did America come out of World War II with a great sense of accomplishment, a great sense of optimism, a great sense of unity, and a great sense of achievement in terms of not only what it did during the war, but World War II basically got America out of the Depression. Ultimately, it got America out of the Depression. You know, the Depression started in 1929 with the stock market crash. That wasn't just 1 or 2 years. It was a decade. You know, we're talking about inflation now and the hard economic times, and we're getting very impatient. And, you know, prices have been high for a year now or 2 years and things like that. Not only were prices, but the unemployment was skyrocketed. It was off the charts. It was a major depression in several facets of our society. And it really was World War II. Certainly, FDR, President Roosevelt, enacted many government-supported plans to put people back to work, the New Deal. That's what the New Deal, if you ever hear that term, the New Deal, FDR's New Deal, what it was about was a new deal with the American public, basically. And so that's when so much building got done. After World War, during the Depression, the country was looking for ways to get people to work. And so it was government-funded plan programs that created a lot of jobs, and that's when we got a lot of our highways and our infrastructure done. The government was investing money in these projects in order to put people to work. And while it worked to some extent, it didn't get us out of the Depression. It eased it a little. But who's to say how long the Depression would have lasted here in America? But when America got into World War II in 1941, after the bombing at Pearl Harbor, within 4 years, three and a half really, the war was over by mid to late 1945, and America was a completely different country. In many ways, as I said before, with a unity and a purpose, and then by helping to win the war with our allies, a great sense of achievement and optimism, and out of that post World War II victory, it just created a whole new perspective. It elevated America's standing in the world, and elevated people's confidence within themselves. And that's when we see the America that we know most of we see, you know, the, I don't know if it's a capitalistic or an ambitious, but it's when we talk about the American dream of everybody, you know, working hard and getting a house and sending kids to school and that American family, those American ideals, many times people will flash back to those times in the late 40s and early 50s. It wasn't all perfect by any means. The country still had a lot of internal problems, certainly with civil rights and other things like that. But there's no question that America thrived in many ways after World War II. And because people had jobs, we were out of the Depression, the economy was percolating. Not only were there more businesses that had made money during the war because they shifted their production and they didn't have to sell items to people that couldn't afford it anymore. They were manufacturing items that were being used and paid for by the government to go into supplies needed to fight the war. So it was just a boom time for manufacturing and businesses. There was no question. How many of these should I make? Because I don't know how many I'm going to sell. Because if the public doesn't have the money, then maybe I can't sell them. Well, if you got a government contract, you know you're going to sell them. And all that just trickled down. And so the economy was booming, optimism was booming, and with the economy booming and people having jobs, then don't forget you had a workforce now returning from the war. Back then, while women were certainly involved in military service and in the military, they weren't fighting. They were involved in other aspects. And so suddenly when the soldiers came back, now you had a workforce and you had a demand for workers. It was a perfect storm. And so the United States economy just exploded. And with that came the explosion of many different and new businesses, including advertising, because more people had more money and there were more items and people were buying more luxury items, or there was more competition with more items within a specific group. And so how does one company make their product stand out from the other? Advertising in print, and then later, of course, on radio, of course, and in print, and then later on television. And Mad Men really captured the business, the advertising business, and how it worked, and the way that American business in general worked in the late 50s and throughout the 60s and even the early 70s. And you saw many, and the show did its research, and they based a lot of the shows on real events that happened in the advertising industry. And real, I mean, they changed some of the actual names of the products, and sometimes they didn't. But actual events and things that happened within the advertising world, they use those as springboards for their own stories. But as I say, the evolution of advertising, you know, always it started very like society was in the 50s and in the early 60s. It started as very kind of conservative, maybe a little repressed, this image, this illusion of everything perfect, the perfect home and the dog and the wife at home cleaning and the husband comes home from work and the two kids were at school and their clothes are clean and we're talking about different butters and household items and lawnmowers and whatever it is. But it was projected in this illusion of the American dream, of the perfect American family. And then, of course, those things started to change as our society changed in the 60s. as the baby boomer generation began to exert its power, and the music changed and the clothing changed and the attitudes changed, and so did the advertising, because don't forget, they started to now advertise not only to the adults who were for the most part in the 40s and 50s and early 60s, the adults ran the house budget and were in control of the bank accounts and the pocketbooks. But as the baby boomers were born and then started to grow up and families had a little more money, the children were a little more indulged and they were given more power. And they were telling mom, buy this cereal or can I get that bike? And mom and dad had some more disposable income than the average family did 15 or 20 years before that, like it was during the Depression. And they were trying to capture that American dream, whether it was an illusion or not. And so then advertising shifted and started to be aimed at children as well, not just adults, not just the housewife. If you look at many of the early advertising for on television, it's a lot of household products aimed at that time, the homemaker, the housewife, because she was out there cleaning the house, keeping the house clean, doing her chores, well, not her chores, but doing her work around the house. And so if it was a vacuum cleaner or it was a glass product to make things shine or whatever that was, you know, or it was groceries, food, frozen food, butter, whatever it is, it was aimed at the woman. That was her purview. And then things changed too. Then suddenly they realized, well, wait a minute. Men buy things too, don't they? So then all of a sudden there were advertisements for shaving cream and more male-oriented products. And then, as I said, as they realized that kids were getting a little more spending power in the home, then things got aimed at the kids. Cereal commercials. Cereals were suddenly aimed at children with cartoon kind of characters. Tony the Tiger, things like that. The reason I'm saying all this is because advertising has always reflect our society. In some ways, it reflects our society. In some ways, it helps push our society forward. It takes us a little farther than we may have thought about going. We're going in that direction, and advertising has pushed us. You cannot underestimate the power that advertising has had on our culture, how we think, how we act. And it's not just purchasing. That's the main goal. But it's what we wear, how we talk, what we look like. I mean, you take a commercial from 2024 and you compare it to say 1950, what's the first thing that you would notice? I think undoubtedly, if there's a family portrayal in a commercial, what's the first thing you think you're going to see is a major difference between something from the 50s and something from 2024. Biracial marriages, right? My gosh. Almost every commercial seems to have a biracial or even sometimes a homosexual, same gender family. You never would have seen that in the 1950s. In the 1950s, you would have seen a white, mostly, husband and wife with two little, well-behaved children, and the parents running the household and the father coming home with the briefcase and the suit and the wife greeting him at the door and the kids sitting at the table attentively. That would have been what a 1950s or early 60s commercial would have looked like. In 2024, completely different. Advertising reflecting our culture, and even sometimes perhaps over representing it. I don't know if there are that many biracial marriages going on. But if you watch television, you certainly think that almost everybody is. So what a difference. So advertising not only reflects what's going on in the industry or in our culture. Hey, you know, there's more biracial relationships. Let's show that. Let's be more inclusive. And then it's gotten to the point now where it's almost a prerequisite because that's become the norm, at least from advertising, or at least the image that people want to project for their product, because we are also in a time when we are very aware of how people may react. But advertising has always reflected the change in behaviors, the change in attitudes. And as I said, sometimes it has reflected it, sometimes it has promoted it, and sometimes it has moved it even farther. I preface this all because I've been watching some commercials, and as I said at the beginning of the podcast, it's been interesting where you I'm just watching and you notice something and you go, oh, okay. And then you see it happen again and again and again, and it goes a little farther. You know, we always like to push the envelope, and today we push the envelope much more. I mean, there used to be an unwritten rule on a lot of things. There's no more unwritten rules because of the fact that everyone, potentially, at any time of the day, as I said before, 3 a.m., the access that we have to communicating to each other, it used to be, you know, very restricted. There was three television networks. There is only X amount of ways you can get on those networks. Well, today, everybody potentially is a content producer. Everyone who has a cell phone, or anybody who has a computer. And that's not the way the world was. So you were seeing some very specific images, and they were in many ways dictated by unwritten rules. Well, you can't do that on TV. You can't do that. Well, maybe you can do that. Well, maybe you can get away with that. But today, it's all over the place. Anyone can post anything, anytime, anywhere. Look at TikTok, right? So, it's not surprising then, and certainly if there's no filter, if there's no governor, as they say, we're seeing things that are getting posted that are, once again, images or viewpoints or whatever. Some things are being posted and going viral and gaining traction that we never would have even thought could be shown in public or talked about in public before, or even alluded to because of the unwritten rules of good taste or standards. Guerrilla marketing, as I said before, it's there to shock. It's there to break the rules. We're in a guerrilla communications world now, not just marketing. Anything we want to talk about it, we post it. That is very different than the way things were 40 or 50, even 40 years ago in the 80s. We were still being driven by those same constructs. The internet, once again, you know, it's hard. If you're a younger person, it's hard to even, because if you were raised in this, you don't understand. And you say, well, but what do you mean you only did this? Or what do you mean? It's hard to even comprehend. I understand that, because things are so wide open and free now. And people have grown up in that kind of culture. So you can't understand that not only were things more restricted and pigeonholed, but the part that younger people can't understand is not only were things more restricted, not only was there less access than we have today, but the key part of that whole thing was, yes, there was less access. It was more restricted. And The majority of people accepted it that way. There was no revolution. We're like, well, we have three TV networks. That's what we have, so that's what we use. That's why cable television was such a revolution in the mid-80s. Because for the most part, everybody watched three stations and a few independent station and UHF stations, but it was the main driver of entertainment, whereas ABC, CBS, and NBC. And cable television came along and said, you know what, at that time, for $10 a month, or maybe even $5, I don't even remember what the first cable prices were, you could have 100 stations. You can get your MTV and a lot more, your Comedy Centrals and your A's and E's and whatever it is. Oh my gosh, it was like the dam burst. And now what do we, it's the same, similar kind of thing with streaming. My gosh, when you go on one of your streaming services, whatever one you have, when you search within one of the major ones, whether it's Netflix or Disney Plus, Amazon, when you browse through, look at all the content that's there. It's mind-boggling. Even in today's world, you just click, 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 click. And look, you know how casually we go? Oh, no. But that stuff's all there. If you would have, you take somebody, you know, everybody says, well, you know, you took somebody from 200 years ago and showed them what we could do today, their heads would spin. You don't even need to go, you know, 200 years or even 100 years. No. Go back to the 80s. Just 40 years ago. When we had, and let's say we had cable television and we had all those new choices, those hundreds of stations, even those hundreds of stations do not even compare to the thousands of entertainment options that we have at a fingertips distance on a daily basis through our smartphones and through our computers or our televisions with streaming services. Even the explosion of cable, which gave us 125 stations and people's heads were going out of their minds. You take someone from 40 years ago and show them, and they were in a vacuum. They didn't see the progression of this because most of us were around. We've seen the progression, and as most things progress and evolve, we just get used to them and we go along with them. But if you had somebody that was just isolated from 1984 and brought them here and then turned on the the program guide for Amazon and Netflix and Disney Plus and just said, go ahead, find something to watch, they couldn't believe what was at their disposal. And so I'm talking about this because, as I said, I've been watching some commercials lately, and as I said, commercials have been pushing the envelope, especially over the last 10 years, because there are very little filters, and we're used to a little more edgy and controversial images and topics in the communal world than we ever were. There was always either specific laws or at least, as I said before, unwritten laws. Well, we can't talk about that. I mean, there were some times back in the 50s and 60s, even the 70s, when, for instance, a bra commercial could not show the woman wearing the bra. They were selling the bra, but it had to be on a mannequin or on a model of some kind, of, you know, not a human model, a plastic or a styrofoam model. They couldn't show the bra on a woman. My gosh, you watch commercials today for bra commercials? Oh my goodness. There they are, right? Wow. Yeah, there was a time. I remember those times. I was a little kid, but you know, there were restrictions, but those days are gone. And so I've seen a trend now. It's not just a mistake. It's a trend. And you've probably seen these commercials because they're on all the time, and I think they're very successful. Some of them there are very clever, but there's no question that they are there to shock and move the envelope. As I said before, advertising pushes us sometimes, but they are there to break the rules. You know, a big word in today's business world is be a disruptor. You know, change the status quo, disrupt the status quo. Everybody wants to be a disruptor. I don't know if that's still a hip term, but I know it was about 5-6 years ago. But the goal is to do something to grab. It always has been in advertising to grab attention, no question. Where's the beef? 1984, Clara Peller. Still remember that for Wendy's, right? That's how you know that was a successful commercial. Don't we know the songs for Burger King and McDonald's and things like that? Have it your way. You deserve a break today. Things like that, right? But there's no question that today, because there's so much noise out there, there's so many different places that you can see advertising on television, on your streaming service, on your phone, on your computer. So advertising is a little much harder today because there's a lot more out there. There's a lot more white noise. There's a lot more noise in general in our society today. It's not just nicely compartment in little compartments like it used to be. Oh, now it's time for this. No. It's anytime, anywhere, anyhow. And advertising is, once again, reflecting that in our society. So you watch the average commercial today, and there are very few few unwritten rules, and they're making, if there's some subtleties there, they're not as subtle as they used to be. I'll never forget when I watched, when it first aired. I mean, now it sounds like that was ancient, but I do remember seeing it. It wound up winning Larry David an Emmy Award, and deservedly so. I remember watching the Seinfeld episode when it aired for the first time of the contest, when George and Elaine and Kramer and Jerry got into a contest to see who could hold off from self-gratifying themselves the longest. Already, for the early 90s, a very controversial topic. Yes, we knew what the topic was, but it was rarely, if ever, discussed on television. As I said, unwritten rule. I don't know if there was a rule that you can't talk about self-gratification on network television, but everybody just didn't. That's pushing the envelope. But Larry David has never been afraid to push the envelope. Now, the great thing about that episode was not once in that episode of the contest was the word masturbation used. And that's what made it funny. That's what made it unique. That's what helped it get on network television. Because Larry David creatively found different euphemisms and different phrases and different images to convey what was going on in this contest without ever really saying or showing what was going on. And that was the brilliance of it. So that's where we got the term, the master of your domain, right? That's the most famous line of that episode. Are you still master of your domain? Yes, I am. And the way that they showed that people had succumbed to the temptation during this contest was whoever was sleeping well at night had obviously dropped out. Once again, edgy, clever, bringing in a topic that at one time would have considered just not only taboo, but just completely unacceptable for network television. And Larry David found a way to bring it into the mainstream and do it in a clever and inspired and memorable way. But of course, as time goes on, not all things become then have that much of a nuance. As we start to see and get more of it, it gets a lot more watered down, and it's just there. So I've seen a couple of commercials now for products now that I'm wondering, I'm seeing a lot of advertising, and it's in-your-face advertising, and it's very graphic, I guess graphic is the word. It's just very out there, honest. And it's like, wow, we never talked about this like this before. But we've never been in a society now where we talk about everything like this now. So my question on the bigger topic here is, as I've been watching commercials and seeing these new products, and I bet that you can, maybe you haven't, maybe you've already guessed it already. I don't know. But if not, I think once I say it, you're going to go, oh yeah, I've seen that. And were you a little taken aback by it? Here's my question. How long have we been so smelly? How long have we had body odor in general that has been so extreme? If you watch TV commercials today, we must have had BO that nobody has ever talked about amongst ourselves, that we've just accepted our smelliness because we have felt that there was nothing we could do to combat our smelliness. Now, granted, as I told you, in the evolution of advertising, certainly there have been, products and commercials that have talked about body odor, right? And there have been deodorants, underarm deodorants, different deodorants, right? I mean, we know all the brands that have been going on through the years, like, you know, Sure and Right Guard and Old Spice and Secret and Dove and Menin and Axe, right? So there's no, and a lot of those, if you go, and a lot of these deodorant products were developed back in the 40s and 50s, and they were advertised on television, but they were done very delicately, very subtly. They made reference to, but didn't talk about body odor, those two words. They danced around it. They hinted at it, but there was a little more modesty. There was a little more decorum. It was like, okay, we all know about, just like, you know, the contest on Seinfeld. Okay, we know about our body odor. We know if we get a little ripe under the armpits, right? So here's a product that can help you, but we're not going to scream it to the world. We don't want everybody to know that we actually might sweat. But everybody must know it. That's the way our society was. We knew all these things. We didn't talk about them. Well, those days are gone. And maybe it was shows like Seinfeld that put this out, these formerly taboo topics into the mainstream, so much so that advertising just built on it. Well, hey, if Seinfeld could talk about self-gratification, why can't we talk about body odor? Why can't we talk about smelly armpits? And why can't we just say that? Why do we have to dance around it? We are in a world now where we don't dance around anything. We just say it. And advertising is reflecting that. But wow, have you seen the way deodorants are being marketed today? And I think, and the one that jumped out at me initially is the one I think we've all seen. It's on constantly. Do you know the one I'm talking about? I bet you do. That's right. Lumi. Lumi. I don't even know what the name means, but it was all of a sudden these commercials, I heard them on the radio, and then I saw them on television. The inventor of Lumi is a doctor named Shannon Klingman, who comes on and just, you know, tight close up of her face and her body and her product, and she just lays it out there. You know, we all smell, and we've got on our body odor. I mean, and she talks about with, because first Lumi came out, and it was for women. I'm not sure what Lumi was supposed to mean, but this was for women. Women, we all know that we've got these smells that we have to deal with. And she was talking about every part of the body. She would not only say privates, she would mention the private by name. She says pits and butt crack and under boob and you name it. Right out there, guerrilla marketing. There's no, pardon the pun, there was no beating around the bush here. It was, we smell, and here, and this deodorant is, I invented this, I'm an OBGYN, and I've been dealing with women and their lack of self-confidence and their self-worth is what her impetus for this was, to say, how do we, because women have felt insecure about their bodily smells, and so she invented Lumi. And she comes right out on these commercials and shows you where to put it and tells you where to put it and tells you what smells. And she does it without any hint of embarrassment. She's out there very aggressively saying, hey, we know we smell. We know we have these things. You know, there's no sweetening. There's no, you know, dancing around it. There's no beautiful animation or nice new age music. She is in your face with the product, with her body, putting it on in all the danger places. And that is the lure of this. I'm sure when they were sitting down to say, well, how do we advertise this product? The consensus was, we're not going to be embarrassed. This is a real problem, and I want to solve it, and I'm doing it, and I'm showing how it works and where it works and why it works. And boom. Those commercials made you at first go, whoa, who is this? What is she talking about? Until you saw it 2 minutes later and you go, okay, let me watch this. Is she really saying what I think? When I watched that Seinfeld episode, I'll never forget, when I'm watching the contest, I'm watching this and I'm going, as the show is progressing, I'm like, are they really talking about what I think they're talking about? And then it was very obvious. And now you're intrigued because you're seeing the way Larry David finessed this once taboo topic to make it acceptable for network standards and acceptable in the mainstream. But that was 30 years ago. We don't worry about those constructs anymore. So Dr. Klingman comes out and says, hey, I've invented this great deodorant that works for 72 hours, that eliminates all your smells and all the spots. As I said before, she names them and she points them there. She uses Lumi on all those spots. As many as she can on television. There's still some boundaries we can't cross. But she's crossed many of them in an effective way. Because apparently her view is we just need to talk about this. We are removing the veil on this. We smell. We know we smell. I've got something that will stop you smelling. And there's no question that product and that approach has worked, because you see Lumi all over the place, and now you see other products by mainstream companies that have been making deodorant for 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 years, also getting to the act. They may not do it as brashly as she did, but as I said earlier, she's a disruptor. She is shaking the status quo. Now, the establishment says, hey, this Lumi thing seems to be catching on. We need to get into that business. And they're talking about privates, but not as graphically or in your face as the Lumi inventor and spokesperson does. But other brands are getting into that space because they realize, wait a minute, this is an area where people are buying. They might not want to talk about it. They may not in the past wanted to admit it, but this woman, this inventor has come out and said, I don't care. I'm selling this to you. You know the problem exists, and here it is. And now you're seeing other manufacturers getting into that space, maybe promoting it a little less brashly, but still promoting it in the same vein, if you will. Maybe not as much as in your face, not as much as straightforward and matter-of-factly as Dr. Klingman is, but they're doing it. That's what the business world is all about. That's what capitalism is all about. If it works, then someone else is going to make it too. Everybody might be very hesitant to be the first one out, so there has to be someone who's brave, who breaks the rules. And when they prove that it's a viable market, then everybody jumps in. Well, you know, look at the movie business. Oh, this movie couldn't get made for 20 years. And then somebody made it, and now everybody, make me one of those movies. We see it all the time. But I didn't know how much we smelled. Because she comes out, and she does, and as I said, she's talking about armpits and under boobs and butt cracks and you name it. And then what happened? Clearly, it's like selling a bra, right? You're only, once again, another Seinfeld episode, you're only selling to 50% of the population. So, what, a year or so later, after she introduced Lumi for women, well, who smells more than men, apparently? If you think women smell, what do you think all that testosterone is doing? So now, all of a sudden, while we're used to, when we see her on her commercials, and we're expecting to see a Lumi commercial, she comes out with Mando. Mando. I don't know what Lumi means, but I could see where Mando comes from, right? It's for a man. And it's the same sales pitch, the same way, the same, using the same kind of descriptive adjectives and but aimed at a man and talking about their areas, various areas, right? Same tactic though, boom, in your face. Men, do you want to smell better? We all smell, boom, boom. You want your privates, your pits, your, I don't even know what she did, she say packages? I don't even know what she's used as the euphemism. But boom, Mando. Now we've got Lumi for women and Mando for men. And I'm watching these and I'm saying, how long have we been these smelly animals? I guess we've always been these smelly animals. If you really go into the grocery store or you go to a pharmacy and you go into the self, you know, care area, yeah, I guess there are a lot of deodorants and soaps that make us smell good, right? We're just always trying to smell good. Well, apparently, Dr. Klingman has found something that can make us not smell for 72 hours. She even had some kind of a, you know, a survey or some kind of a study of the smellosity of a person. Is that a word? I don't know. Of after 5 minutes, if you take a shower, you're already smelling after 5 minutes, even if you've used soap or whatever it is. But if you use Lumi, 72 hours. Look, I'm not trying to do any commercials here. She's doing fine. She doesn't need me. But I'm just saying, wow, what a shift in how advertising has been done and what is being advertised and how it's being advertised right in your face. There's nothing left to the imagination here. Well, almost. Now, as in your face, as Lume is and Mando is talking about how we have all these horrendously smelly, you know, portions of our body that need attention, both men and women. Nobody is free of this. Both sexes are smelly. We are a smelly species, clearly. But have you seen, I mean, this took me a couple of views for it to really sink in. And then I was just like, oh my gosh, talk about guerrilla marketing. Talk about no governor, no filter on this. Clever, like Larry David's The Contest, getting its point across without ever saying it. But as I've said many times on this podcast, we are a visual society. We are a visual animal. And so this commercial, once again, about the odors that emit from the body. You know, folks, I'm going to be just as open as they are, right? If they can do it, then why can't I? But have you seen the commercial for the Manscaped? I think it's called the lawnmower. I mean, basically, it's a hair clipper, right? It's a hair clipper. You know, at one time it was used and is still used, you know, for men's beards and goatees and sideburns. You know, they've had them at barbershops for years. Over the last, I don't know, 15, maybe 20 years, the manufacturer said, well, yeah, I mean, you know, we're selling this for men with beards or goatees or, you know, hygiene. You know, the last 20 years, men have become much more concerned and aware of their appearance, right? The rise of the metrosexual. Men are using different shampoos and moisturizers and all many of the things that women for years have been using in terms of their appearance and their skin and things like that. Now more men are doing that. And so the companies that made these clippers, they said, well, wait, why should we, you know, what if there's some, what, you know, what about men that don't have a beard, who don't have a goatee? How do we reach them? Where else do they have hair? Well, at first it was, well, you have it on your chest and on your arms and on your back. And over the last 20 or 30 years, while facial hair has become certainly popular, but body hair is almost, you know, against the law in today's society. Right? I mean, you can't have any hair anywhere on your body if you're going out in public. And if you're a man, especially, I mean, you know, you've seen those commercials for women to shave their private areas? I was like, wow. What? I mean, if you've probably seen that commercial, there's a woman wearing a bikini bottom. And my God, talking about getting graphic, there's not much left to the imagination on that one. And with men, it's like, okay, how do we take this clipper and how do we expand its use? Well, body hair is not considered attractive anymore, especially to younger women. In these 40s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, and especially in the 70s, you know, a hairy chest was a sign of masculinity. Go watch the old Magnum PIs with Tom Selleck. He's walking around without a shirt with this big hairy chest all the time. Not even a question about shaving it. Are you kidding? You know, men don't shave their chests. Well, they do now. They get waxed. They get their backs waxed. They get their chests shaved. They get their arms waxed or shaved. You name it. And everywhere else. So suddenly, a disruptor. There have been a lot of established clipper companies that have sold these clippers in a very traditional way, very subtly. But when Manscaped came along, they wanted to shake it up just like Shannon Klingman has with the deodorant. And so they were making references to packages and things like that, the male anatomy, which were always taboo and off limits. But the latest commercial is both funny and I don't know if it's in good taste or it's comic genius. I don't know if a younger person looks at that and gets it and laughs immediately, or an older person goes, wow. Once again, when I saw this commercial for Manscaped for the lawnmower, I felt like I was watching the Seinfeld episode in 1992. Are they really saying this? As I'm watching the commercial, I've had to watch this commercial three times. Let me give you the gist of it if you haven't seen it. But you can go online. I'm sure you can look it up. The product is called the Lawnmower by Manscaped. Look under The Boys. The Boys. Once again, I hate to keep referencing Seinfeld, but Seinfeld, Larry David, was cutting edge on this, and the show always was, and brought these little taboo topics into the mainstream in a funny way. On many occasions on Seinfeld, they made references to men's boys, if you know what I mean, the two boys. Kramer said, my boys need protection. My boys need support. What was he talking about there? Well, if we're all talking now about unwanted hair, which we are in our society, men and women regularly getting waxed, been going on for years, but now it's a part of society. It wasn't just I do this. It's if you don't do it. So while we now, body hair is unwanted in every shape or form in our society. And here's a company that says, well, there's certain areas on men that could use a little manscaping. And so have you seen this commercial called The Boys? If you haven't, as I said, I've seen it on YouTube, so go there. It's called The Boys. Look it up. But you'll see it on TV. I've seen it many times now. And I never can. I'm like, wow. And they show men walking around in different social situations. And then there's two much shorter men who are walking in front of them, dressed the same way as the walking man is, right in front of his crotch. And they have giant bushy hairstyles, huge, huge, unmanageable hairstyles. And they're walking in front of the man on the beach, at a wedding, wherever. And women are looking at them and kind of looking at them with questionable or askance, if you will. And then they show the lawnmower product. And they show a man in the bathroom. And at one minute, he's got his robe on and there's two shorter men in his area there with this wild hair, and then he's got his lawnmower clipper, and the next image is a woman opening the bathroom door and looking in and looking down and smiling. And suddenly, the two short men who had all this wild, unwieldy hair that were standing in his crotchal area are replaced by two men with completely round, bald heads. What are we supposed to infer from that? That's where we're at now today. I didn't know that that was such a problem, but clearly it is. I don't know how long we've been smelly, that we need deodorant now for every part of our body. It's a national crisis, but there are new deodorant products out there. It's not just a world made for Dove and Secret and Right Guard and Old Spice and Ban Roll-On and Sure and all the rest of them. It's a world for Lumi and Mando and other things. Any spot on your body that needs to be de-smellified or now de-haired, there's a product for you that will get the job done. Your boys will thank you. Your significant other will thank you for using the lawnmower, for being Manscaped, for using Mando, for using Lumi. You know, the funny thing is, I've always talked about on this podcast how at the end of the day, the human being is an animal. We are a part of the animal kingdom. We are not separate from. We don't have domain over. We are a part of it. We are connected. We are a species. We are an animal. We have been domesticated. We have risen because of our intellect. But our roots are in the same sphere of nature. So I say that at one point, and then on the other side, I watch this, and I'm like, but are we that smelly? We go to a zoo, right? You go, whoa, don't go into the elephant house or whatever it is. Whoa, you smell like an animal. I guess when I'm watching these commercials today, whether it's for deodorants, just in your face advertising for 72-hour deodorants, or these ads for products that help us get rid of unsightly private area hair, and we're talking about this stuff in the open without any softening of it, no modesty. We're showing it. We're trying to be as honest about it as possible. And I don't know if it's just my age or not, but it's just like, wow, because I remember how genteel and how nervous we are about talking about anything about privates. And now, wow, it's out there. So I guess it's time for us to take a sniff. Have we been smelly all these years and we've just been accepting it? Is this really an advance? It sounds like it. I guess we'll have to find out if it smells like it. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 419. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears. Take care of the boys.